Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. We're going to be talking about aging, sexuality, and menopause. But you guys in the audience, and even you younger people, stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of really valuable information for you. I'm talking to Jill Angelo. I will be talking to her. She is the CEO and founder of Genève. Did I pronounce that right, Jill?
Genève? Yes, you got that right. Yep,
good.
It's Genève. Thanks.
So nice to meet you on the air. And, of course, I've talked to your person, Shannon Perry, and she gave me some of your products, which are wonderful. My fiancé, Brian, and I tried the personal lubricant, water-based personal lubricant. It's just a fabulous product. But we're going to do kind of a switch. My listeners are used to me interviewing a guest. And as I understand it, you're going to interview me today, since I am an expert on aging and sexuality and menopause.
Yes. We're going to turn the tables. And Dr. Diana, we're thrilled to just be spending some time with you. And thanks for using and trying out our products. Genève has a full line of women's, you know, hygiene and healthcare products that address some of the symptoms as women head into menopause and midlife health. And we wanted to talk to you because you are an expert in, you know, sexual wellness, marriage, family therapy, and even a gerontologist. And we just really believe and have heard from our listeners that they want to hear from someone like you all around sexual health and wellness and aging. So we're excited to be here, and thanks for having us.
Well, you're welcome, Jill. I wanted to tell the listeners that you are the CEO and founder of Genève, and you're a former long-term Microsoft exec, and you felt that life had other things in store. So when you found an opportunity to satisfy your passion for helping women be happier and healthier, you grabbed it. I like women who take advantage of opportunities, and you're a smart woman, and I happen to know from your card inserted in these products that you gave to me that you are committed, really committed to creating quality products and to fostering a community where women can find information, conversation, and inspiration. And this is this show today will affect the community. It's part of the community, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the biggest need out there, and you know, I had a wonderful career in technology, but the little voice inside me that always kept speaking was, what about your passion in helping women? And, you know, it's been a natural transition as I'm starting to enter my 40s and my body's changing. It's the perfect opportunity to almost be a consumer of what I'm also advocating for, and that is preparing women for, you know, their bodies changing as they age and head into menopause and what that can mean and how that they can really live their most vibrant and fulfilling life in spite of the change. And so that's my mission, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Well, I think that when we can follow our passion, I know you wanted to ask me about how I got into this line of work, and I just feel so fortunate because I absolutely love what I do, and I feel that it matters. And honestly, how could anything be more fun? And I bet you can say the same thing, Jill.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't get more fun, especially when you're thinking about your own life. And for you, Dr. Diana, I really would love to dive in. You know, sex and sexual wellness is absolutely fun. So how did you get into this line of work? And how does your own life inform your practice and vice versa? Is there overlap?
Well, yes. So I had an interest in aging, successful aging and sexuality since about 1980. My grandmother, who was then in her mid-90s, had remained sexually active. And I was close to, this is my mother's mother, and she was such an open, vibrant woman, a businesswoman. I mean, she was very successful in business, but she loved being sexual, and she was sexual until she was about 94. And by the way, that's true of my mother now, who is, maybe 93. She's approaching 95. So I have good examples in my family about a longevity and remaining sexual. And but I got really interested going back, and that happened to also be the time that I started my graduate school. I started first with a master's and then later got a PhD. But so I remember writing a paper on aging and sexuality back in the 79, 80, right in there. Also in the early 90s, I did some research with Dr. Walter Bortz in Palo Alto, which is where I lived then. And these studies on aging and sexuality, we did two of them, were published in medical journals. So from that point on, I got to also call myself a gerontologist. And I work with, in my private practice, I work with, and also I work in a practice in Kirkland here in Washington with Dr. Serena McKenzie. But I do work with older couples, but also with younger couples. And, you know, Jill, you revealed your age, and you're young, and you're looking forward to aging successfully, I believe. So you want to get all the information you can get, right?
Absolutely. You know, and what's so encouraging about, you know, the brief history you took us through is that, wow, your grandmother, you know, had a really sexual lifestyle into her 90s. And I think that's amazing. You know, we always think people's sex lives change as they age. And can you kind of describe what are some of the physiological changes that happen, and how do they show up in our bodies, in our brains, or even our emotions?
Okay, so Dr. Serena McKenzie or any, she's a naturopath, or any doctor can describe this in better detail, but I can say that our hormones go down. Estrogen, which often is necessary for a sensation, so estrogen replacement for postmenopausal women has been shown to restore sensation levels to premenopausal levels. And this hormone is also associated with lubrication. But of course, a woman doesn't even have to be perimenopausal or postmenopausal, menopausal or postmenopausal, to have problems with lubrication. And I bet in your research for your company, you found that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we certainly did. You know, we hear from a lot of women that, you know, it's painful or it's dry, and we hear, you know, is this it? You know, am I done, or is my life as a sexual being finished? And I'm sure you get that question a lot, and how do you respond to that?
Well, I do get that question a lot. It's often the woman who has a lower libido as her hormones have dropped, including, I mentioned estrogen, but we also have to talk about progesterone and also testosterone. So often the woman has a low libido, and in fact, 1 in 3 married couples, partnerships, struggle with a gap in sexual desire. I will tell you that mismatched desire is the number one problem discussed in sex therapist offices. There is, of course, a medical explanation, hormone imbalance, or a side effect of medications, including some of the antidepressants, the SSRIs, that can impede female orgasm and can lower her sex drive. Stress, fatigue, depression, grief, negative body image, unresolved issues from childhood such as sexual abuse can also absolutely sap sexual desire. And that's why if we're going to treat the whole woman, it's really good to have the mind-body approach to female sexuality, because these problems that I just mentioned often need talk therapy. They need mm-hmm. a medical intervention, and they need talk therapy. And then, of course, we have continuing arguments and feelings of anger between spouses. You know, so often I have to do psychotherapy before I can do sex therapy, because if the couple is angry with each other, if they don't want to go to bed together, you know, that makes sense.
That's perfectly understandable.
Right. So I do talk about all of that, and I talk about what people can do, what women can do in particular if she has a lower sex drive. And one of the recommendations I make is to just do it, because new research suggests that for more than half the population, sexual desire doesn't just happen. Most have to be physically stimulated to feel desire. So people who think they need to be in the mood to have sex might, in fact, need to have sex to get in the mood. And that surprises some women, you know. Yeah. And then they, you know, they're likely to say, not tonight, honey, I have a headache. But it's really, in fact, for some women, orgasm can relieve the headache. So that's,
you know, it's therapy then in more ways than one.
In more ways than one.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yes.
What do partners need to understand about their lover who is going through menopause? Like, how do you typically address that, or how do you help educate? Are there things specifically about menopause where you work with a partner to bring greater understanding through that talk therapy part
of
your treatment?
Yes, because what they have, Jill, is a couple's problem. You know, if they're in a marriage, if they're in a committed partnership, it's a couple's problem. It isn't just her problem. It's his problem, too. And I would say to the guy, because some guys think, well, it's just all in her head. But we do know that there are very real physiological problems and differences, and it can start with a blood test is often necessary first, and to see where her levels of her sex hormones are, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. But I'd say that the guy really needs to have a little more empathy for his woman. Mm-hmm. And when she has hot flashes, it's not all in her head. It's very real. Mm-hmm. And of course, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, which we're going to talk about, can help with all of this. But as with so many things, if we're talking to the guys, communication is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's surprising in this day and age that some folks believe if you really loved me, you should know. You know, there's that expectation, you should know if you really loved me.
Yeah.
But I say it's like going on a treasure hunt without any clues. You know, I think you've got to talk to your partner, especially in the light of day when you can see your partner's face and subtle reactions. And the woman can say, you know, I was reading an article, or I listened to a podcast, or perhaps this one, and I realize there are some things I don't know about what you enjoy in bed, and I want to create that kind of pleasure for you. And then she can describe what draws her to him and how it makes her feel. And a lot of times women hide. They have body anxieties, and the men have performance anxieties. And of course, both rob the person of the ability to lose oneself completely in the lovemaking, which can be so delicious to lose oneself in the lovemaking.
Yeah. But even the words you just used around starting that dialogue and giving, you know, your patients or your clients the words to start mm-hmm. that dialogue, it's got to be so powerful and helpful because, you know, starting that, I think, is just half the battle, half the challenge.
It is. And that's actually why sometimes seeing a therapist, particularly a sex therapist, can be useful because she can jumpstart the dialogue between the two people because sometimes they don't even have the vocabulary for it
Well, switching hats, because obviously you have also, you know, a physiological component to what you do, and you mentioned HRT and bioidentical hormones. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us why that's a good solution?
Well, it has been for me for about 15 years. And the bioidentical is, as opposed to regular hormone replacement therapy, our bodies have receptors for the bioidentical hormones, which need to be compounded in a pharmacy. And this is, of course, after a blood test, and these need to be prescribed by a doctor or a naturopath. And, and then they need to be, blood tests need to be repeated to see where the levels are. And for me, I've had regular mammograms and regular blood tests and regular, well, it turns out annual, because I'm in really good health for a woman my age, which is pretty old. I mean, I'm just over 70 now. But I'm in good health, and I think that the bioidentical hormone replacement therapy has made a big difference. Mm-hmm. So you have to get those. And then I was very fortunate because I did not have cancer, breast cancer especially, in my family. And so taking estrogen replacement can be dangerous for a woman who has breast cancer in her mm-hmm. in her history, her family's history. So it's a very much of an individual consideration. I've been fortunate. I feel like I'm just so, I really appreciate, it's helped my skin. Testosterone replacement is good for libido and also for energy, and also it helps with muscle development, you know, and I regularly exercise, which is essential for women. As they age, I swim every day or most every day and walk and do other things. So the bioidentical hormone replacement therapy is really good. I was, before I moved to Seattle 8 years ago, I was at UCLA's Female Sexual Medicine Center. And honestly, I witnessed many sexual transformations, especially as a result of testosterone replacement. And, of course, women produce testosterone in their adrenal glands and ovaries. And around the time of menopause, the amount produced declines, which can lead to loss of desire as well as fatigue and sometimes thinning hair. So there are, there are side effects. For me, I've had a little thinning hair. That's about the only side effect that's negative. Maybe a little more facial hair, but honestly, it's so worth it to have all the rest. You know, there are always trade-offs in life, right, Jill?
That's right. That's right. You know, and who would have thought testosterone would be something that we supplement in our bodies as women? But I think that's really encouraging to hear about, you know, its impacts on, you know, muscle development and libido. You even said, you know, that sex is good for our health. What are the benefits of having an active sex life, and how much sex is normal or good?
So many. There are so many. Well, let's talk about a longer life. And this is a rather famous study in my field, and it was a British study. And it found that men who had intercourse, and by the way, I get my clients to say, when they talk about sex, they often mean intercourse, but I get them to use the word intercourse because I think of sex as so much more than intercourse, right? Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, in this study, men who had intercourse at least twice a week lived longer than men who had sex less than once a month. And then there was a U.S. study that had similar findings and a Swedish study, which, so we've had a lot of studies about this, the sex improving longevity. The Swedish study examined the sex lives of 70-year-olds, and they found that men who died before their 75th birthday had ceased having sexual intercourse at earlier ages. And the same Swedish study did not find that women live longer if they had sex more frequently, and neither did a study in North Carolina. However, and this is a great however, in the North Carolina study, women who reported enjoying sex more live longer than those who didn't report enjoyment. Women need to feel satisfied in their sex life. And I was widowed a number of years ago, and I had a very passionate, wonderful marriage, and Charlie died very suddenly. It was truly a shattering experience. And so then I didn't find anybody for almost 10 years, and I moved to Seattle from Los Angeles, and through Match.com met Brian, and he and I have been together for 6.5 years, and it's, you know, we continue to have just a robust sex life, and I mean, it's just wonderful, and I think when I was talking to Shannon in your company, that I said that that my personal life does inform my professional life, and I'm kind of a cheerleader for good sex because I know what a difference it's made for me as a senior, and Brian, as a senior person, also knows what a difference it's made, and we sort of think of it as our fountain of youth.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's such a positive message for women and men to hear at all ages. Mm-hmm. I think especially women, because you know that the point you made around the study that showed women live longer of those who enjoyed sex. I think that joy and that enjoyment. To your earlier point, well, you need to have it to have desire. Mm-hmm. It just kind of feeds itself, and I think that's just encouraging. But you know, if a woman is feeling that her sex life is being impacted negatively, mm-hmm. you know, her drive is surely diminished. Mm-hmm. How do you address that? Like, what do you recommend she do?
Well, I recommend that she sees her doctor or her naturopath. Dr. Serena McKenzie is the naturopath specializing in sexual medicine that I work with. And on my website, drdianawiley.com, under the resources page is all the information about Serena McKenzie. And I think it's important for a woman first to go to somebody who's qualified. There are some doctors, and I hear these stories, who are not very well informed about human sexuality, and they didn't maybe have enough training in medical school. Now they're just starting to have more training in sexuality in medical schools, but for many years it was like maybe 2 hours of training, and that's not enough. And then you have certain doctors that are embarrassed to talk mm-hmm. about it. So, mm-hmm. you know, I suggest to women that if you have a doctor who's embarrassed or doesn't seem to be able to, either refer you or talk about it, or to find another doctor. So I think the first step is to to go to your doctor, and this is the mind-body approach. And sometimes, physical therapy is needed too. We'll probably talk about that when we get into pain with sex. And then sometimes nutrition. Seeing a nutritionist can be important. This is all forging the gap, the multidisciplinary approach. Maybe even yoga can be helpful. There are many things sort of holistically, and your company is kind of holistic in terms of using natural ingredients.
Absolutely. Not only do we offer a line of, lubricants and moisturizers that are created for, a woman's body and to be safe with pH balance of the vaginal environment and so forth. But we also, bring content like our conversation today to our customers because there is so much more to feeling amazing in your life and having a happy sex life, whether it's nutrition, whether it's hearing stories from others, whether it's hearing, how I think one thing you bring out, Dr. Diana, is just really how holistic and broad, your patients have addressed it, whether it's anywhere from talk therapy to yoga to, products to more, speaking with their doctor. And one thing I love about what you said earlier is that your life informs your practice. And
yes,
I'm sure that's one part of why you're so approachable compared to maybe doctors that can't talk about it.
Oh, I think so. And I get a lot of younger people, in this area in Seattle, and you're in Seattle, and actually you used to be with Microsoft. I get a number of younger people who can afford my fee because sex therapy is not covered by insurance generally. They come out of Microsoft or Amazon, and they're really needing help. And John Gottman, who is a local guy who studied couples for 40 years, he's retired now from the University of Washington, but with his 40-year studies of couples, he found that it takes the average couple 7 years to get help. So I'm always delighted when younger people seek help. It helps a lot to do it when you're younger. I mean, you can still make changes. A couple I'm going to see later today, they're in their mid-50s and they're trying to make some changes, but it's a little harder to make changes. Mm. And I see couples in their 60s and occasionally in their 70s. It's just easier to make changes when you're a little bit younger.
Yeah. For a society that is somewhat obsessed with sex and sexuality, why is sex between mature adults still so taboo and hard to talk about?
That's really a good question.
I don't know if there's an easy answer, but I love is you're bringing awareness about it and helping to make it more comfortable with young people as well as more mature adults.
Yeah, more mature adults. Well, it's still taboo for many people. I mean, the younger people have fewer taboos in general around it because they've grown up with pornography, which, by the way, many of the guys anyway, which is a terrible sex education. It does not teach men how to touch a woman, or does not teach men realistically about female sexuality. I would say some porn has taught some men about how to perform cunnilingus, because the camera will come in close when a man is going down on his woman. But in general, I think men would do very well to swap porn for a bottle of massage oil and deal with his woman's whole body experience, right? But it's still taboo, and sometimes people don't have the language for it. Like when I was raising my daughter and son, we always used the words penis or vagina or vulva. It wasn't PP or, you know, but I'm a sex therapist mother, and I made sure my children got a really good sex education. And I think they thank me for it now.
I bet they do.
But most parents do not teach their children about sex very well. There is a wonderful website. I've had Dr. Mark Schoen on this program the beginning of this year. I've had him on before, too, but he's the founder of sexsmartfilms.com, and he has about 400 films that deal with all kinds of sexuality. And there is an animated film that originally came from Sweden. You know, they're so enlightened there. To help parents teach their children about sexuality. And that's a very good resource. There are plenty of books, too. But, you know, parents are the sex educators of their children, whether they want to be or not. And because silence is a message, of course. I think it's very, very important. I'd like to go, one of your questions, and I just wanted to talk a little bit more about this, and it has to do with body image. I contributed to a Huffington Post article from a little less than a month ago, and it was 8 lies about sex you need to stop believing, according to sex therapists. So I was one of the sex therapists, and this is what my myth was, number 3, and this was from the Huffington Post, and I guess it was published, I think, April 11th. So
right,
myth number,
I read the article.
Yeah, good. And so what I wrote, because so many women have trouble with their body image. So myth number 3, you don't have to feel hot enough to truly enjoy sex. And I wrote, media and porn may be to blame for women believing they have to have a beautiful body to be alluring and enjoy sex. Typically, men don't notice a woman's physical flaws. All they think is, oh, my God, a naked woman is near me. I've suggested to my female clients that no matter what they look like, if they love their body, men will too. This may require cultivating an appreciation for her uniqueness. When she can start to appreciate her imperfections as endearing distinctions, she will have begun to love herself in a way that allows her to love others. You know, that last point I made is pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to love others when you don't have a good opinion of yourself. And the whole body image, the whole body image thing is really gets in the way for so many women.
How do you work with women on that? Like, that's a hard thing to overcome and to change. What do you do or where do you start?
Well, I will first give some background information, and some of my younger clients don't have a clue who Marlene Dietrich was. Do you know who she was, the film actress?
Yes.
From the...
Yes.
She was beautiful from the 1920s and 30s. So she said the average man is more interested in a woman who is interested in him than he is in a woman with beautiful legs. And, of course, she was known to have beautiful legs. And then another quote, and then I get into, I will tell you what I suggest to women. Another quote that I really like is from Rodney Dangerfield, who has since died, but the comedian. He said, don't let food have more power than it should as you age. And he said, I'm at an age where food has taken the place of sex in my life. In fact, I've just had a mirror put over my kitchen table. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And then Erica Jong, who wrote Fear of Flying, she had an interesting observation. She said, and I don't quite believe this to the extent that she does, but what she said is, all women think they're ugly, even pretty women. A man who understands this could get laid a lot. Women find fault with their figures, and on and on and on. Women worry all the time. And even models, you know, fashion models, I've heard stories where they need to be a little bit intoxicated in order to relax in front of the camera. And then Judith Viorst, her, in terms of body image, she's a wonderful poet, a funny poet, Judith Viorst. Mm-hmm. And I love this little poem. She says, it's hard to be devil may care when there are pleats in your derriere. It's hard to surrender to sin when trying to hold your stomach in. I love that.
That's great.
And then one so more clever. Quote. One more quote about body image, and then I'll tell you what I suggest to some of my clients who've got a real problem with this. Robert De Niro, he remarked, according to a new survey, women say they feel more comfortable undressing in front of men than they do undressing in front of other women. They say that women are too judgmental, where, of course, men are just grateful.
that's great. I love that.
Yes. And, you know, it's really true. Most men don't notice our physical flaws. They don't, but women think they do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a woman recently say to me, one of my clients, that she said, well, I'm a faded college pom-pom girl, and I tend to view myself more as someone's pudgy grandma now, but she said, I have a lot more going on for me as an uninhibited 57 than I ever did as an uptight 18.
Mm. Yep.
You know,
yep.
There are
That's
trade-offs.
That's so true.
I get women to get naked, to look at their full body naked in front of a full-length mirror and to start looking at themselves parts that they like.
Mm.
And some women have a lot of trouble finding parts that they like because they're so judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's they like their ankles. They like their elbows. Hopefully some of them like their faces. But when they get into body image troubles, a lot of women have trouble with their breasts, if they're sagging, or their thighs, or their stomach. Stomach seems to be a problem area.
Mm,
and so
yeah.
I get them to touch those parts and appreciate those parts for the good work they do. Like their chubby thighs may carry them well. They can walk well. Their mm-hmm. stomach, well, they're digesting well. So they, you know, you have to be grateful
yeah.
for your body and what it's still managing to do well. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about, I used to worry when I was younger about my chubby thighs, and really now I don't worry about it at all, but then I had, a few years ago, I had hip replacement on the right side only. I'd had a couple of falls when I lived in Hawaii on the same right side, and it started in motion some osteoporosis. So I got a new right hip, which was very successful, and that was in 2012, and I haven't had any pain since. And so far, and I'm knocking on wood, the left leg is holding up. But before that, I never even thought about my legs carrying me places, because I did have pain until the surgery. I had pain walking. And so you have to appreciate what you have.
Until
you don't have it anymore, you know?
You know, even a friend told me once, think about how you would talk to yourself, like how you would talk to a friend. So how would you comment on your friend's legs or stomach? You know, it would be much differently than how you think about your own. And I think that's also a great way to just flip the mind a little bit to positivity.
I think that's a very good suggestion. How would you talk to yourself? There are other problems, of course, that women experience other than body image, and it has to do with stresses. Stresses that assail the relationship, the home life, and really the woman's self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And so with these women, you know, I help them with their communication with their partners, their male partners or their female partners. You know, I have some lesbian women in my practice. And they might require bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, a weekend retreat, a sex toy, or a combination of the three. There are really a lot of sex toys that can be very helpful. And I know your lubricants are compatible with the water-based ones with sex toys, right?
Yep, absolutely. You know, we hear from, you know, even physical therapists, like earlier you mentioned pain, you know, pain in sex, which is something I want to hear your thoughts on and how you address that, because, you know, even in physical therapy, if a woman seeks, you know, physical therapy support and help for pain in that area or during sex, toys can be, I think, certainly helpful in terms of regenerating, you know, muscle tissue and just exercising the region. But can you talk a little bit about painful sex and when, you know, we've obviously been talking about body image, but how about when there's real pain there?
Yeah, it's something that is very real for a number of women. Sometimes the sources go back to sexual abuse, and it's like with vaginismus, the contraction of the vaginal opening, where it's very difficult for the man to penetrate her with his penis or even to get a dilator in there in the beginning. And sometimes it also has to do with a traumatic medical experience. I have one client who she was born with fused labia. And so when she was about 3 years old, and she remembers this, it was so traumatic that the doctor, without very much anesthetic, pulled her labia apart.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So she ended up with vaginismus. It's like, I don't want anything in there anymore. But she and her husband were very motivated because they wanted to conceive a child. And I'm happy to report that we worked, and she worked with a physical therapist specializing in therapy for the vagina and vulva, and then with the talk therapy and some other things too. Anyway, they were able to to conceive a child recently. So I
can
say they're going to make me the godmother. Because they wanted to have a child.
Yeah,
but pelvic floor. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. But what a place you brought them to, like from where they were. That's just what a transformation that can happen.
Yes.
That's a good example.
It's a very good example, and it's possible to get better. But pelvic floor physical therapy, we have the people in the Pacific Northwest. They are in other cities, too, like Los Angeles. I worked with some New York City. But some places in the U.S. don't have physical therapists who specialize in pelvic floor. So we are lucky. There are so many resources here in the Pacific Northwest. So the physical therapist will work with the woman. She'll often do biofeedback and stretching exercises. And then I communicate with the physical therapist and with the doctor. So it does indeed become a real multidimensional kind of approach.
Yeah, that's great. It sounds like you collaborate with doctors and in this case, physical therapists. And you talked earlier about treating the whole woman. How do you like to cooperate to treat that whole woman? Are you typically the starting point for a woman, and then you'll help direct her to the right specialist?
Well, it varies. Sometimes the woman will read my website and she sees that I'm approachable and that I work in this area, and she'll come in. And if she hasn't been to a doctor, I will suggest that she go to one and get the full. But many times they have been. And then the doctor, if he or she is smart, will refer the patient to a sex therapist who knows what she's doing, what he's doing. And this is the mind-body approach, which is, you have to think about the sexual function complaint and the emotional contributing factors can be anxiety and stress, can be depression, can be self-image, can be the history of abuse or trauma. And then we have relationship contributing factors, can be conflict in the relationship, communication skills, maybe partner sexual dysfunction, and logistics, which we can see in military families.
It sounds like just sexual wellness. Would you say, kind of as a whole, you've been doing this for many years? Do you see a progression of it being something that couples or people are coming to see you more? Is there a new awareness around it, and it's growing in it being normal, what kind of progression have you seen over the years, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
Oh, yes. People are much more open to it and to getting help. And I do think the Internet, for better or for worse, it's mostly for better, has helped because people are better educated now. And I even mentioned earlier that pornography is mostly not such a good sex educator, except maybe for cunnilingus and kind of an openness. But then there's a lot of information on the Internet, and some of it is not accurate information, but it's information, and it gets people talking. In 2012, when 50 Shades of Grey came out, most people said, well, it's not written very well. And that's true, but, oh, my goodness, it got conversations going, and that's what we want. We want conversations.
Yeah. Did you take a group of people to see the film, or what did you think of it?
I haven't seen the second film yet. I did see the first film. It was all right. And maybe the second film is a little sexier than the first film. It was all right, as I said, but it got people talking. And and BDSM can appeal to certain people. And actually, people that have kinkier sex typically have better communication, because there has to be rules set down before you start up with some of this kink kind of sex. And if there's bondage, there has to be safe words, there has to be a whole bunch of stuff. So there was actually, in the Journal of Sexuality, there was an article a couple of years ago that said that people participating in BDSM were actually healthier than some people thought, because they do communicate so well.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a learning for me. I think that's fascinating, but it's absolutely, logical that you do need the language and the safe language, and there's a complete openness there.
Yeah.
About the activity.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Dr. Diana, is there anything that we haven't really addressed that you want to talk about that you feel women in midlife and menopause should hear relative to sexual wellness?
Yes, I wanted to say a little bit more about the health benefits of remaining sexual. I mean, I talked about the longevity, a longer life, but there are improved heart health benefits. And there are many studies that show this. The one that I like the most is Brazil's Minister of Health made a surprising recommendation when he encouraged Brazilians to have sex 5 times a week as a countermeasure to the nation's hypertension epidemic.
Wow.
To bring down blood pressure. Have sex.
I know. Amazing.
Oh, I know. And so there are other benefits for heart health. And then there seems to be a lower risk of cancer in men and women. For instance, a French study found that women who have vaginal intercourse not at all or infrequently had 3 times the risk of breast cancer compared with women who had intercourse more often. And then a Minnesota study found that men who had intercourse more than 3,000 times in their lives had half the prostate cancer risk of those who had not. Mm-hmm. And so the cancer thing is important. And then we have sex can lead to pain relief, improved sleep, and reduced stress. So Beverly Whipple, a lot of people have heard about her. I've known about her for 30 years. She's conducted studies suggesting that more sexual activity helps relieve lower back pain and migraines. Because, you get oxytocin released during sex, and that can give pronounced relaxation and sounder sleep. In my personal sex life, I feel like post-coitally, I'm kind of in this oxytocin float, this soup. And it's just lovely. It's just lovely. And, of course, when a woman has orgasm or orgasms, there's more oxytocin released. And it's a positive feedback circle, because the more you're touched, the more you want to be touched. And oxytocin is called the cuddle chemical, the anti-divorce chemical. There are a lot of things good about oxytocin. And then sex helps maintain a slimmer physique and improve weight loss.
Wow.
I know.
That's great news. Tell me more.
Okay. So a study of healthy German adults revealed that men and women who had sex more frequently tended to be slimmer than folks who didn't have as much sex. So sex burns 50 to 60 calories per encounter. And of course, it's way more than that if you have aerobic sex, I would guess. Yes. But,
yep.
So, So anyway, there's more. And then sex promotes healthier aging for men and women. A group of men being treated for erectile problems saw greater increases in testosterone when they had these treatments, but they also had frequent sex. And then menopausal women experienced, this was a study in Nigeria, and I know it's far away, but still, they experienced fewer hot flashes when they had sex more frequently. Mm. And this may be because sexual activity helps regulate hormonal levels, which in turn affects the symptoms of menopause.
And then just
two more really quickly. It boosts the immune system. There are studies that show that. And it really can improve your appearance and your relationship. And it fights stress in so many ways. So, you know, as I said earlier, I'm a real cheerleader for good sex.
Yeah. I think, well, it's apparent. It's obviously in your genes, but also you've made it your life passion. And
yes.
And I bet the people that you've impacted are just countless, and hard to even keep track of. But you've had an incredible impact on a lot of people in a very big way, not only from a health perspective, but, you know, just a lifestyle and, you know, standard of life. And I think that's really got to be rewarding for you.
Well, it is. And I congratulate you too, Jill, from leaving something that at Microsoft, but you had this entrepreneurial spirit, plus you wanted to help women. And so to start Geneve, did I pronounce it right?
You got it, Geneve. Yep.
Geneve, with two N's. Yeah. Right. And so people can get your products by going to Geneve.com, and I'll put this on the write-up that I'm going to do right after the show ends. They can get your products from your website directly, right? Or through Walgreens.com.
That's right. You can go to Walgreens.com or Geneve.com or Amazon.com. On Geneve, we do offer free shipping. And so, we will also, by signing up with Geneve, you become part of our Geneve community, where we publish offers and information and are building this community of women heading into menopause and feeling great in their bodies and managing it and taking control of it versus it controlling them. And so that's kind of our whole mission. And we hope we can help as many women and men as possible. We do have men who buy our products as well.
Well, Jill, that's the music which signals the end of this program. Thank you so much for interviewing me, and I'm so glad to get the word out about your excellent products.
Thank you. It's been our pleasure, and thank you again for spending time with us.
You're welcome. We'll be in touch. Thank you. Bye-bye.